Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Syrupcast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke, and Brad Bennett, a man who refers to himself as the bad boy of tech. He's across the internet from me. He looks like a Super Nintendo game because Zencaster pixelated him. But he's here, and I'm assuming he's talking.
Yeah, I actually feel like the broke boy of tech this week with the new MacBooks that came out. But, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll get there.
That's a good line. I like that.
Thanks.
And John is also on the podcast with us again today. What's good, John?
I'm back. I'm alive, surprisingly, after this week. I mean, it's just such a nuts week in the tech world, but it is Techtober after all. So, like, what do you expect?
It's not even over yet.
It's not over yet. When you hear this, it will be over. But right now, It's not over. I'm still living through it.
Yeah.
So that's probably a good place to kind of add a little like note here. This podcast is focused on Apple's new MacBook Pro, the third gen AirPods, and Google's Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro. There's also a Samsung event that just happened. Nothing really super eventful, like a new custom version of the Z Flip 3, I believe. And then there's a Huawei event on Thursday, but we're not going to be talking about those. This is an exclusively Google and an Apple podcast. We're also skipping some of the segments this week based on feedback from some of the listeners. We are just going to like go right into the meat of the show. We'll bring those back sometimes when there's a little less to talk about, but this is a pretty packed episode and we want to make sure that we have the time to talk about everything. We can get into it right now. The first thing worth mentioning is at Apple's event on Monday. It was an exciting event, but also really only highlighted two products. So we're going to talk about the first one. That is the new MacBook Pro, the 14.1-inch and 16.1-inch. I'll just like go through high level some of the specs. Minimized bezels, 120Hz screen, a notch, which was kind of hilarious because I really, really didn't think that Apple was going to do that. And then it 100% did. Battery life improvements, maybe. A new chip, upgraded version of the standard M1, the M1 Pro, and the M1 Max. Interesting naming convention. I'm sure we'll talk about that too. Three USB-C Thunderbolt 4 ports, an SD card slot, and MagSafe. I think before we get into the discussion, two things that I want to note. These things are very, very expensive. $2,499 for just the 14.1, and the 16.1 is $3,139, which is like a crappy used car. Like that's a ton of money for a laptop. And then on top of that, to me, as someone who's like covered the Mac for like a decade now, I guess that's scary to think of. And I reviewed the original, like not the original, but the last revamp. This is like one of the few examples that I can recall in Apple's history where the company is really listening to feedback in a way. Like I know that there's no USB-A ports, it's still USB-C. I think the world's in a very different place in terms of USB-C adoption than it was back in like 2016 when the last MacBook Pro refresh happened. Yeah. But there's an SD card slot and there's MagSafe, right? Like that is a big deal that Apple brought those things back.
It's huge.
And I guess
it's
we can just
like,
yeah, go ahead.
Was Johnny Ive like ruining Apple products secretly? Was he just making them prettier and less functional and like we just all went along with it? We're like, no, they're gonna get thinner and lighter and that's the way things go, and we all just were like okay with that because we wanted thinner and lighter things. Maybe because Johnny Ive was telling us that, but now he left and we're getting like thicker things with more ports and everyone's like, maybe this is what I wanted.
No, I think like I tweeted about this. Like I 100% think that that's what happened, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that at Apple, there is this push to try to reinvent the concept of the laptop. And with, like, with the touch bar is gone. That's another thing that I didn't mention in the intro. Like,
oh yeah.
I remember when the touch bar was revealed, I wasn't as negative about it as other people. Like, I thought it was a cool idea in theory. It had
potential for sure.
I'm sure I wrote an editorial, like, if you Google my name and touch bar, there's probably something on Mobile Syrup about, like, oh, the touch bar is sick and it could be great, something like that. But it never panned out and it never worked and it froze all the time and it just straight up sucked. But I do think you're right, Bennett. Like, there's got to be some level of truth to that where, like, he was all about making things thinner, removing ports, the touch bar.
Simplifying things. Yeah.
Simplifying, like, yeah.
It's not necessarily like Apple's lost that design ethos, but it seems like, yeah, they've sort of stepped away from that endless crusade to the portless device. You know what I mean? Like, I think, I mean, talking back like to things we wrote a year ago, like, I think a year ago, I don't know, sometime randomly I published this post about this theory of Apple moving towards like a portless iPhone, and, you know, the slow degradation of ports across all the devices, just pushing people towards USB-C and then pushing people towards wireless standards and like finding new ways for connection through necessity because that's the devices we had. And now like that whole sort of theory has gone to shit because it's like, oh, oops, yeah. They stopped on that track and now they're just giving people like the tools they need to get work done, which is better for everyone. But an interesting design shift nonetheless. Like, I'm sure there's going to be like a lot of Medium think pieces on this that are going to be well worth reading if you care about like ultra nerdy Apple theories, Apple strategy.
I think also there's an element of Apple recognizing who's actually using their different devices and tailoring those devices for those users, right? So part of the issue with the ports on previous MacBook Pros is that professionals need a lot of ports to do their job, right? Whether it's connecting additional monitors to their laptop, connecting cameras or other hardware, like, people actually use those ports. And so, you know, as great as it is to push towards a low port laptop that's a lot simpler and easier to use, is it alienates, you know, the professional users who are going to buy that laptop because it's great for video editing or whatever other feature that they're going to use for their job. So I think it's kind of a sign that Apple's starting to recognize to an extent. I don't think they're fully there yet, but they're starting to recognize, hey, you know, the people who buy the MacBook Pro are actual professionals who need XYZ port or need, you know, whatever hardware in their laptop. And so I'm hoping this is a sign that Apple's moving away from using Pro as a marketing term for like, oh, this device is just better, so we're going to call it Pro.
Actually,
you know, this MacBook is for professional users, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's the kind of way that this leans, and this kind of like falls more into the camp with the Mac Pro, like the cheese grater guy. So it's like both of these seem, you know, leaning towards those really like higher end professionals if you need them to. But since the 13-inch Pro is still like involved, it's hard to know if they're going to like step away from that for sure.
Do you guys want to run down 13-inch?
So you go so, past. No, you just said what you're going to say.
I was just going to say, I kind of feel like the 13-inch is going to disappear at some point in the next like 2 years or so. Like, I think it's just going to be like scuttled and it'll disappear after an Apple event.
I get to that. What were you gonna say? Next MacBook Air has like an M2 processor, or does that like next spec bump that way? Maybe the need for the Pro goes away. But I was going to say, do you guys want to run down the specs and just say how we sort of feel about the new changes?
Sure. Yeah.
Want to start with the notch?
Oh God, yeah. So I was tweeting about this and like legitimately saying that I just didn't see it. It doesn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense to me. I think if it was going to include Face ID, which
yeah, exactly,
it does not. Nope. Maybe Face ID, maybe the hardware is in there or something. I don't know, and it's going to come in a Mac OS update. I really don't see that happening. Yeah. I would have been like, okay, Face ID is pretty good, especially in the context of like a laptop. I would be okay with it.
Man, Windows but Hello the is notch awesome.
Just opening a laptop. Is it actually awesome, or are you being sarcastic?
I legit love it. Like, this Surface that I'm talking through on right now has it, and like it just sits on my desk and I just whoop, open it, logged in every time.
Yeah, yes. Windows Hello is actually really, really nice. A lot of Windows laptops now have a almost like a motion sensor type thing where if you walk away from the laptop and you don't close it, it'll turn off the screen and it'll lock itself. And then when you come back, it'll sense that you're there and it'll kick on the camera, recognize your face, and unlock for you with like
that's cool.
Almost no interaction. Yeah, it's like so a it's really smarter, cool. It's really handy.
It's like, or not smarter, but a more natural version of like Face ID. Because with a phone, you still need to pick up the phone and hold it in front of your face. With a computer, is like you just kind of sit down or just open it as you would, you know, because you have to do that action anyway. And it just sort of unlocks on the way. It's really great.
Yeah, the notch is perplexing. I don't understand why it's there. I know we're going to see all kinds of hacks that basically remove it from the equation. In the context of a smartphone, I've just grown to live with it. Like, I forget that it's there. I really don't even notice it in the iPhones anymore. And I think that'll probably happen here, but I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting.
It seems just like obnoxiously big for what it's housing. Like, I feel like the notch only needs to be like half as big as, you know, it just seems weird. I mean, whatever, maybe it does need all that space, but you know, weird notch.
Just, you know, I agree that it's like seems super big. I also wonder why Apple hasn't done like a hole punch cutout on any of their devices yet. Like, it's always
that would look a lot better on a laptop. It's so unnoticeable.
And also, and I don't know if this would be the same on Mac. I'm mostly a Windows user, but I just like trying to picture a notch or a hole punch camera cutout on my Windows PC. Just would seem super strange because it would like,
you can
move your Windows and your apps all over the place. And wouldn't it cut into those things? Like on a phone, you're always going to have your status bar at the top. So there's kind of like, you don't have to worry about the notch
you have that on
affecting
Mac.
Your apps. That's true. You do have the
in the screenshots bar. That I've seen, it almost looks like the notch cuts into like if you're using Safari or whatever, it cuts into like the top half of the window. And I just can't that's one of the things when I get my hands on it later this week, I'm excited to play around with, because I just can't fathom how that would not be an awful experience. But I mean,
yeah,
moving on from the notch, there's stuff like
the
fact that
batteries.
Yeah, battery next. But the one thing I wanted to mention was 14. I'm just going to call it 14 and 16 inches. I know it's
point one, of course.
I'm tired of saying 0.1, but fitting a 14 inch laptop like display inside the same body as the 13 inch, I think that's cool. I think the bezels on the old Mac
is quite the same though. Have you done the measurements? I was under the impression that it was just a tiny bit bigger.
It's supposed to be pretty much the same, like not noticeable. Okay. In the same way, like when the iPhone changes and it's like a couple millimeters bigger or something like that, it's not like a significant difference. So that's cool. 16 inch is definitely not for me. That's too big, but I am glad that they offer that as an option. You were talking about battery life, right, Bennett?
Well, the one last thing I want to say about the size is, how do you feel about them being, or not? I don't know what the correlation is between the old 16 and the new 16, but the 14 is half a pound heavier than the 13. Thoughts? Care to comment? I don't know. I don't think it'll be that much in practice, but it's tough to see.
More on battery, paper, it I sounds hope. Like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. It does. That's right. But it's also supposed to be a tiny bit thinner. So it might be, and this is like me like making Apple fanboy justifications, but I guess I'm going to say it now. But I'm kind of hoping that it's like supposed to be roughly the same size, a little thinner, but a little heavier. And I'm kind of hoping that will just make it feel really compact and like really nice. You know, when things kind of do that, it feels really like built tough.
And
so I'm wondering if maybe it'll give off that impression because it's the extra weight in the same small footprint, but we will have to see. But moving on to battery. So the 14 has less battery than the 13, but the 16 has more battery than the old 16. That's where it's like, the longest MacBook battery ever compared to 16 inches. But in the 13 inch realm, if you were to get the 13 inch M1, you're getting better battery life potential than the 14 inch M1 Pro or M1 Max.
I never buy Apple's battery life claims because they're based on using their own software, right? Like using Final Cut or Safari. And I use Apple devices. I'm primarily an Apple user, as I've talked about a bazillion times on this podcast. But I live in like a... like a Google World, or like I use Edge. Edge is my primary browser, like, because I really don't like Safari. I use Google services. I use Photoshop. I use Premiere. I use Audition. I don't use Apple software. So my experience when it comes to battery life is always vastly different than what Apple claims. I would expect, I think, like, this is just my gut reaction. Like, I don't know if it's going to be, like, this is how it's going to play out. But my guess is that both the 16 and the 14, the battery life is going to be, well, not the 16 because it's jumping to the M1, but at least in the context of the 14, it's going to be very similar to the 13-inch M1 from last year. If not,
I'm interested to see how it actually plays out, because the 14 has the new M1 Pro chip, right?
They both can be configured with the Pro or the Max.
Okay. So regardless of whether you go with the Pro or the Max, both of those chips are significantly more powerful than the M1 chip.
That's a good point.
Which also means that they're going to use more power. I'm not sure how much, because it's of the ARM architecture, which is already pretty power efficient. But they definitely showed it off during the event.
Like, when they were showing the graphs, it was like kind of the M1 stuff was here, and it's like the M1 Pro Max was like higher, more power, but more power consumption. Still not as much as like the Intel CPUs, but sort of more in the middle ground between them a little bit.
But yeah, I'm interested to see how that's going to impact the battery life, especially if the 14-inch has a smaller battery than the M1 MacBook Pro, the 13-inch M1 MacBook Pro. Because the M1 Pro or the M1 Max, whichever chip you use, both of them are going to be more power hungry than the M1.
It'll probably lead
to worse battery life.
It'll be interesting to see if there's a difference between the Pro and the Max chips in terms of battery life, because that's sort of like, I mean, this is all kind of theorizing because, like, I don't really have that much money to spend, but like when you're looking at them, it's like, oh, like, is the best sweet spot to buy like the cheapest Pro or M1 Max chip in the 14, or is it fine to just get
I know what you mean,
like, do you bump that chip up because then you get like the faster transfer speeds if you need them, which is like probably not like 200 gigabytes to 400 gigabytes, like, that's probably not going to like affect me too much, but
so that's the difference. What like when we were looking, like when you look at Twitter and like every YouTuber ever was buying this laptop yesterday and like posting how much it cost, what was the one that you guys saw people buying the most? For me, like, I saw people buying it like a Max 16-inch, right, which is like like in the $5,000+ territory, but in my head, like, the average person's just gonna buy the low level 14, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
It's tough. Yeah, the tough part about the low level 14 is it's still like an 8-core CPU, so as much as you're still like getting a lot of GPU improvements over the M1 chips, on paper, it doesn't look like that much of a jump. That's where I'm like interested to see if the improvement is as like incredible as they say, because that's like, it seems like that's the one they binned all the way down. Like, you know how I'll talk about like a pixel binning thing on the 7-core MacBook Air.
Not pixel so binning, chip binning.
Chip binning, right? Yeah. Pixel binning is for the camera.
Pixel binning. That'd be so funny.
Yeah. But like, so it seems like, you know, there are quite a few like binned all the way down options. Like, they showed up on stage that there were like three different options, but when you go to buy them, I think there's like five or six different chip sort of setups with different, like, you know, variations on the GPU, CPU. Like, there's like a 16 or a 24 core GPU one they didn't talk about on stage.
I think the other thing worth mentioning before we move on to the AirPods is like, and John, like, I see you have this in the notes, so maybe I'll get you to talk about it. Like, in a way, this isn't a new, it's like Apple just correcting the mistakes that it made with the 2016 refresh, right? Yeah. So we're seeing like USB-C, Thunderbolt 4 ports, and there's three of them this time, and you don't have to pay a premium to have extra ports. Just every single version of the laptop has three, which is great. The M1 from last year, which I'm doing this podcast from, only has two, and they're on the left-hand side of the laptop, and my monitor is on the right-hand side. So I have this wacky setup where the cords like curl around it. So I'm thrilled that that's no longer an issue. And I love that the SD card slot's coming back, because I hate having to plug a dongle in every time. I do have a dock that has it's the CalDigit dock that has like an SD card slot in it. But at events, like, it sucked to have to like bring an SD card reader, plug it in, pop the card. Like, it was just dumb. It just felt really stupid. And then MagSafe, like,
too.
Yeah, like, also, you know, and you're also out, easy.
You're like, gotta buy another SD card reader.
Totally. I had a backup. Like,
yeah.
Like, I would, like, have one that was in one part of my backpack and then another one that was, like, locked away in another compartment just in case something happened to the other one. And that happened, like, in multiple situations where, like, I just lost one of them and I was lucky that I had another one. So I'm thrilled I won't have to deal with that anymore. And then MagSafe, it was, like, it didn't make sense to me that they got rid of it to begin with the 2016, because it was, there's a lot of things to like about Apple's laptops, but that was, like, one of the very unique things, at least at the time. Like, I know that the Surface connector is very similar. Am I wrong about that, John?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's similar. It's all like
magnetic thing. Okay. Yeah, like, I'm glad that's back as well. It didn't make sense that they got rid of it. I think it's cool technology, but, like, generally speaking, I saw people saying, like, this is like Apple saying sorry for the 2016 MacBook. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what this feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you actually happy about MagSafe? Are you actually happy about MagSafe, or, like, would you have rather a fourth USB-C port? I think I would have rather the fourth USB-C port. To be honest, I can see myself traveling without the MagSafe charger just because everything else is charged in USB-C. I like that, like, two charger life.
That is a good point. But the other thing is, by having MagSafe power, you are freeing up an extra USB-C port.
No, but I think in my mind, in the alternative universe, the MagSafe would have been a USB-C port had it not been on the computer. Like, it would have been just two on each side, like they did in the past.
No, I get what you're saying. For me, like, as long as there's, I actually don't know the port layout. I'm assuming there's two on one side and one on the other side. As long as that's how it works, like, I'm fine with it. As long as I have one port on the other side, that's a perfect setup for me. But I know what you mean. I do think that that's a smart move on Apple's part to at least allow USB-C charging through any of the ports. That would have been, like, a very Apple thing.
Yeah, but there would have been a backlash. Like, there would have been such an Apple thing to do, though. You're right. Like,
yeah, but that's the way they used to, they still operate like that, but we're seeing, like, a bit of a shift in the company after Johnny Ive left. I think there's something to that to some extent, but that's what they would have done. They would have been like, you have to use MagSafe. It's great. It's the greatest thing of all time. It's lovely.
It's the best cord ever been invented.
Yeah, you don't need to use USB-C.
Stop complaining.
But yeah, we should start talking about the AirPods. Was there anything else anyone wanted to mention about
the Pro? Yeah, one thing before we move on.
Go for
it. Do the new Macs come with a MagSafe charger in the box?
Yeah, they do, but they come with the charger in the box, but the base model is a slower charger than the more expensive models. If you get the chip binned model with the 8-core CPU, you're only getting like a 67 watt charger, and then it goes up to like 96 watts for the top end 14, and then what's like over 100 something watts for the 16.
It's like I wrote about it yesterday. Keep talking while I try to open it because I don't remember. I
think it's chargers. But yeah, basically there are three different chargers. You do get one in the box, and it is like a nice braided MagSafe cable. Like, it looks high quality, and this time cable disconnects from the brick. So, like, if you
140
get
watts.
Nice. If you get that, like, frayed end to the cable, because it's like the charger you've been using for 4 years, you can replace that section, which is a pretty smart move on Apple's part. Although it'll probably be, like, still expensive to replace that section, but, you know, hopefully less than having to buy those, like, $200 chargers they used to sell in the past.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, that's good.
That would have been totally another Apple thing to do, to just be like, hey, 100%. We're not including the charger in the box to save the environment. But also it's really, a new it's charger, to save money. So
yeah,
it's like, the whole thing is, in my mind, with that argument, if you actually want to, like, help the environment, give people the option. Like, that seems to be the best way to do it. Like, if you buy a new Mac,
that's what Samsung does,
or a new iPhone, like, or something, you get like a $30 credit to buy a new charger if you need the new charger, right?
Yeah.
Trade in your old charger or something.
One of the things I realized about, and this is more of a cost saving rather than like an environmental saving metric, but like Fujifilm recently did this with the X-T3. Like, they're still selling my camera, but like, it's older now. So they just started selling it as like universal worldwide model. And the only thing they changed is they took the charger out of the box, because like,
oh, cool.
There are different like plugs around the world. So they would have to like, you know, make different boxes and ship them and do all the logistics and like simplify their logistics to not have chargers, because then that any box could go anywhere around the world. But for the most part, I mean, obviously, actually, yeah, because even the Fuji boxes on the outside just say like X-T3 and then the lens, like they're blank, you know, so like they're very, that could, you know, that's a reason for the charger not being in there. Not that I'm with it. I think things should come with chargers, especially laptops. I don't know where we're going, but yeah, it was an interesting thing I learned the other day.
We got to talk cameras at some point, because I need a new camera. My X-G85 is five years old at this point.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm holding. I have an action camera. I can only see a section of my screen in Zencastr, so I may have been holding it on screen.
I think you were. Like, I could see it out of the corner.
I've got a cool camera. Yeah, that's it. Moving on.
Let's talk about the AirPods. I'll do like a high level thing and then throw it to you, Bennett. Cool. New design, third gen version of the, I guess you would call them entry level AirPods. They look a lot like the AirPods Pro. They don't have an ear tip on them. In our notes, I wrote eat tip, which is pretty funny. There's no noise cancellations. There's IPX4 water resistance, head tracking, supposedly better sound, a skin sensor, likely better mics, and better battery life, and MagSafe. Did I miss anything there?
There's the adaptive EQ thing, which they're sort of touting, although that kind of works with the better sound. That I think that's how they're providing the better sound.
True, true.
Also on the, they're not touch. Before they were like little touch pads to play pause, and now it's like a little stem you squeeze.
It's the same as the Pros, right? Like the little, I don't have the Pros in my ear, but the like little stem that you touch, right?
Yeah, you just like squeeze it. Beep. And then I think that's it. I think that's pretty much it for what they're, $239 price in Canada. Did we say that? Oh, also you said they're the new entry level AirPods, but Apple is still selling the old AirPods for $179 without the wireless charging case. The second gen one. It looks like the second gen AirPods in the first gen non-wireless charging case.
Interesting.
For like $179. So like they've kind of bumped that down in the way that they've like bumped the iPhone 11 down to that sort of like, sort of, I think that's what's happening. So these are like the mid-level AirPods now. I don't know how to describe it.
So to me, like, okay, so this doesn't seem like that significant of an upgrade to the AirPods. If someone owned like the second gen AirPods or the first gen AirPods, is this enough in your mind, Bennett, to like warrant an actual upgrade? Like, to me, they sound like the AirPods Pro, which I should talk about this at some point. Like, I've had tons of issues with them. Like, on my third, like, I'm sending my AirPods back to Apple to get fixed again. I think this is the third time. The noise canceling always runs into some sort of an issue, and I get like weird static. Totally other thing we should talk about at some point on the podcast. But like, is this a worthwhile upgrade for someone who owns like an earlier version of the AirPods? Or is this just like Apple hitting refresh on them and it doesn't really matter, any of these new features?
I don't really think so, because, well, A, like the limitations of Bluetooth audio mean that like you're never going to be getting the crispest, clearest sound ever possible through Bluetooth. You know, it's just like not the best medium for carrying sound
waves. But you're the only person who cares about that.
Exactly. Like, people don't really care about that. But like, so what I'm saying is like Bluetooth, no, that's what I mean. Like Bluetooth audio, like kind of levels the playing field
wireless
headphones. So between newer and older headphones, there's less of a space to reach up. Although who knows?
It's never going
to
be that much better.
Yeah. Sometimes Apple can make magic happen, and maybe adaptive EQ or these new sound things you're talking about will make it sound a lot better. But then on top of that, regular AirPods don't use silicone tips. So they don't like sit that snugly in your ears. And which is good. A lot of people find that really comfortable. I'm one of them. I think lots of people like just like sort of hook them in. They feel more clean, you know, not getting like slimy tip. Like they're comfortable. There's no denying that, but there's less sound isolation. So you're hearing more background noise, thus degrading the sound another level. You know what I mean? Like as far as AirPods go, you were never getting a very premium sound. So unless Apple's done something quite extraordinary with this like adaptive EQ technology to like, not exactly noise cancel the sound, but to just really work around the sound to like match it into your ears is kind of what they're talking about. So unless there's something really magical with that, I don't think it's going to be a worthwhile upgrade, just, you know, because, you know, no one's really getting AirPods for the sound quality. You're getting them because they automatically connect with your Apple devices. They automatically pause and you take them out of your ears. They're very small. They're very portable. And, you know, these new AirPods are doing that just as well as the old AirPods.
I think the thing why they kind of interest me a little bit is I have like a latex allergy where there's a lot of wireless earbuds that have like latex tips on them that just cause ear infections. Like I had mid-pandemic, I had like an awful ear infection, and I don't really review wireless earbuds anymore because of that. So like the fact that they just sit in your ears, like the Galaxy Buds Live, which I'm wearing right now, which I still say are my favorite wireless earbuds, not because they sound great, not because they have like really good noise canceling, but because they're comfortable. Like that's something that I like, because I have that problem. But even before that, like I place as one of the most important features with wireless earbuds is how comfortable they are to wear for like 6-7 hours a day. If I like really want to listen to something in like super high quality, I'll throw on like a pair of over ear headphones, because the quality of earbuds is just never going to compare to those, whether it's like wired or Bluetooth or whatever. It's just never going to be even close.
Not that they never might, you know, like down the line when we get like Bluetooth 10 or something, we might be getting like better, but you know, for the time being, it's a little flatter than what you can get through a cable. One thing I will say is, and kind of on the same vein of that, and I actually think I threw this out on something last night, but I was sticking it on the wall and it just said, may the smallest wireless headphones rule them all, you know, may the most convenient, like sort of what it comes down to is like whatever headphone I'm reviewing, I have them all in like a bucket there by the door. Like my back door is right outside this office door. So like all my thing, like
I have a drawer full
there, but whenever I'm leaving, I literally will just grab the smallest pair. And that is like whatever I go for, whoever has the smallest pair at the time is what I find myself gravitating towards, because like, it just takes up the less space in my pocket, less space in my ears. I can like lay down on the side with them in my ear without them like pushing in and like being uncomfortable. Like the smallest, most convenient pair wins, because sound quality be damned, they're just Bluetooth headphones, you know. That being said, the AirPods might not be the smallest, but that automatically connection feature and being able to move between Apple devices is really killer if you have a lot of Apple devices. So not
well, I was gonna mention like, so the Buds Live I use daily with like when we're doing meetings. I sometimes use my AirPods Pro Max that are back there, but very rarely. But one of my issues with them is because they're not an Apple product, they're a Samsung product, obviously, they don't easily connect to other devices, right? So they instantly connect because I have them set up to work with my Mac. Like I put them in and they connect. But if I want to like, I don't know, go for a run or go for a walk or something, and I want to take these with me, I have to like make my Mac forget them. And then go through the whole like manual reconnection process to get them to connect to my iPhone. So there is something to be said about that convenience, because I do like, even though I have like that like allergy, I did find myself using the AirPods Pro pretty frequently. And that's part of why like they're in a box right now on their way to Apple to get fixed. Thanks. I think they just have a replacement program. They'll just send me new ones. Because like I could just walk out the door with them, connect them, and they would work. I wouldn't have to go through all this like crap to make them run. So like in the context of wireless earbuds, convenience, I think, is still king. Convenience and comfort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't want something with like a bad mic or bad music quality, but everything kind of is plateauing at a certain point. So now convenience is just sort of proving to be the most thing that when you get to that point, what matters. Sorry, John, what were you going to say? I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was just going to jump on and say that I agree. Convenience and comfort are the two most important factors for me. I don't have a lot of experience with earbuds because I've basically just used the Microsoft Surface Buds since they came out and not really anything else. And I love the Surface Buds. They sound great. I think they're super overpriced still. They're like more expensive than the AirPods, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they're like three something.
Yeah. And they don't even have noise cancellation. But I just find them super comfortable. And as someone who primarily uses Android devices, pairing the Surface Buds actually isn't that bad, because most of the time when I set up a new Android device, I can pair them using the Android Fast Pair system, which is usually pretty seamless. It's not perfect and it has some issues, and I've definitely had it bug out like crazy before. The worst is transitioning them between like an Android device and a Windows PC, which is surprising because it's a Microsoft product, so you think that they would be designed to work well with Windows, and there's like an app and everything, but the pairing process is not great in my experience. So yeah, like having something that easily switches between all of your devices is definitely a welcome feature in my book.
Yeah. This is kind of like a bit of a tangent, and I won't take us down, I just want to mention it, but it was something I kind of noticed yesterday. I was writing about just like a spec to spec sort of comparison between the iPhone 13 and 13 Pro and the Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro. And it sort of was like, okay, like, yeah, they're matched here. They're matched here. Telephoto camera, you know, 120 hertz pro motion, 120 hertz adaptive refresh. Like, you know, the specs match all the way down. Where it really is differentiating itself is like Google has all these really crazy fun features and Apple has the ecosystem, you know, kind of like what we're talking about the AirPods. And it's, you know, that convenience is, it can be like, oh, so nice, so nice. But without getting too
part
much
of why I'm that, locked yeah, into it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like kind of locks you in once you start to get more and more devices. The only, I don't know, is there anything else for AirPods? Anything else? Anyone?
No,
I didn't know. Oh, the skin sensor. Skin sensor is supposed to be better. Just because that's kind of like a weird thing. And I was had questions about it when they brought it up in the briefing. But like, essentially, the old AirPods use an optical sensor, which I guess is some sort of camera that can tell when something is blocking them and not blocking them to do the auto pause feature. But Apple said that would get confused if you had it in your palm or in a pocket or something. So these new ones have an actual skin sensor. So the auto pause should be more consistent. Also, I guess head tracking. So this is a small one, and I shouldn't go on to it too much, but when in spatial audio first launched, it was just static 3D space. So you were sitting here listening to music, the back music would be there. If you turn, the back music would be there. Turn, the back music would be there. Like, it would be in a 3D space that was like anchored to your head. And Apple didn't put head tracking in. Now they've added head tracking with AirPods Max and AirPods Pro and the new AirPods. And I was testing it out last night with AirPods Max. I don't have the new AirPods to test yet, but it's subtle. It's nice. It's spatial audio was, you know, I think it's getting better. The new James Blake album sounds pretty cool with it. The head tracking part where it's like now, you know, the music comes from your phone. So if you turn, it kind of like puts more of this headphone to make it seem like there's more sound coming from that direction. It's a really subtle feature and one thing that Apple's pushing a lot with the new AirPods. I don't think it's something that's a system seller. I don't think it's something that anyone should be into enough to, like, if you already have AirPods, you should buy it to get this. But it was a subtle improvement, and I think it's like a fun thing that kind of like anchors this like digital music listening into the real world space in like a subtle way, and I like it. It's hard to explain. It's kind of abstract, but it's feels very natural. It's cool.
Real quick before we hit the ad break and move on to the Pixel stuff, was there anything else from the event, Bennett, that was the notable or worth mentioning? I know it was like primarily focused on the Pro and the AirPods.
The only other thing we have in the notes is the Apple Music Voice plan, which is basically $5 a month, but you can only use Siri to play Apple Music. So, you know, when you have like Spotify free and it's like, yep, you basically just get access to all these like mood playlists. I'm in an energetic mood, so listen to an energetic playlist. Or I'm in a country mood, listen to a country playlist. But you can't choose the specific songs. Apple makes you pay for that, but you can choose the specific songs if you want, if you ask for them through voice. But the way they're anticipating people is using it is like those free tiers where they're kind of just asking Siri to play moods, play country, play this, you know, play the new Drake, play this. You could ask it to play a specific song if you wanted, but they're sort of anticipating it for people who just worry about it less. I mean, my mom
it's
is
cheaper
like the,
too,
I,
right?
Yeah, it's $5 a month.
Five.
My mom is like the person who would use this. She has Spotify, and like, I mean, they'll use it on their phones because I guess they got to use Spotify in your car and like things like that. If you go on road trips, whatever. But at home, they just have a Google Home and they literally just say like, "Hey Google, play country music," and that's like the only command that poor Google Home gets. It's just like, "Hey Google, play country music," and that's all they ever say to it. They don't ask it the weather. They don't ask it to set timers. It is a radio to them, and it plays country music, and that's enough. So
that's how my dad uses I think it's like the Echo, the clock, the one that's shaped like a clock or whatever. I gave it to him a couple years ago. That's exactly how he uses it.
That's how my parents use their Google Home device
for music
as well.
Too. Okay,
basically so just play music and what's the weather. Those are the only two commands that they like ever give it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Cool. So let's hit the ad break and then talk about Pixel stuff.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So there was also a Pixel event this week right after the Apple event, which like we had a Samsung event today. There's going to be a Huawei one before. Briefly mentioned this at the, off the top. It's a crazy week in terms of like the tech world. Like I've never seen this before. I haven't been doing this forever, but I've been doing it for a while. And this is unprecedented. But in terms of the Pixel 6, we knew that the phones existed. We've seen thousands of leaks. We've seen thousands of, not thousands, but like dozens of teasers from Google. But we did get the pricing and a couple other things confirmed about the phone. So the Pixel 6 starts at $799. The 6 Pro starts at $1,179. I think these are pretty competitive prices, especially in the context of Canada for a high-end phone. Some of the notable things, there's the Tensor chip, a new design that like even has me, someone who is primarily an iPhone user at this point, thinking about picking up a Pixel. There's like camera features like Magic Eraser, Real Tone. And I guess I should also mention that like if our traffic stats are an indication of how into a device people are, which to some extent they are, people are super, super hyped and super into the Pixel 6. But I guess what we should start with is, John, could you give us like a high level, I guess, kind of overview of the key things that people should care about in the context of the Pixel 6 and the Pixel 6 Pro?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to start off with some of the key differences. Google kind of positioned the Pixel 6 as having a little bit of everything and just being a general great phone for someone who maybe isn't super into the tech world, but, you know, wants a phone that has a lot of cool features. Whereas the Pixel 6 Pro is like the ultimate phone for the nerds out there. It's got like the best of the best. It's, you know, all of the top of the line features. And those are kind of the two ways that Google has positioned those phones. The main differences between the 6 and the 6 Pro is the 6 Pro has a larger screen with 120 hertz refresh rate compared to 90 hertz on the 6. And it's curved on the edges, whereas the 6 is not. For the camera, the 6 Pro has three cameras, one of them being the telephoto lens, which the 6 does not have. Everything else with the camera is the same between the two phones, which is the new 50 megapixel primary sensor and the 12 megapixel ultra wide. Battery, the 6 Pro is slightly bigger at, I think it's 5,000 milliamp hours compared to 4,600 on the 6. And then the colors are different as well. Personally, I think the 6 has the better color options with the sort of seafoam green.
That one's sick.
The like peach pink color, which I don't remember the name of.
Coral something.
Yeah, something slightly like that. Peach. Kind of coral. I don't know. some nonsense like that. Whereas the 6 Pro, the 6 Pro color names are all funny too, but I don't remember exactly what they are. But it's like
somewhat yellow,
gray. Sky color,
they always black, have funny and names.
Like a gold champagne color. So yeah, that's kind of like an overview of the Pixel 6 and the 6 Pro. I think probably the most exciting part of these phones is the custom Google chip, which is called Tensor. And the way that Google has talked about this chip is they put a lot of focus on the kind of artificial intelligence / machine learning aspect, which they've kind of baked into the silicon. And Google says that this is going to allow it to be a lot more power efficient when doing some of the machine learning AI magic that Google has kind of become known for with the Pixel camera and stuff like that. So it'll be really interesting to see how much of a difference maker that is. Google touted that Tensor is a lot more, or is a lot better performance than the Pixel 5, but it's not really a huge leap because the Pixel 5 was using a mid-range Snapdragon processor, right? So that's something to keep in mind when it comes to like performance stuff. But as we've seen from several Google phones now, the company doesn't really seem to need like the highest end, most performant chip on the market in their phones to still create a good experience when it comes to using Android.
Yeah.
For me, like I've been primarily using the Pixel 4a for the last year and a bit, and I don't notice a huge difference. Like the biggest thing that I miss from like a Pixel 4
Wait, do you go 4A other... or 4A 5G?
I've been using the 4A because I like the size better.
Yeah.
The only real benefit of the 4A 5G is 5G, but 5G isn't real in Canada. So we can unpack that another time, but
it's real, just yeah. not in this. Yeah, no,
it's not for you.
It's real in that the icon that you see on your phone says that you're connected to 5G, but as soon as you actually like look at what network band you're using, it's almost always 4G.
Yeah.
And if it is an actual 5G band, it's like 4G speed. So
yes. Yeah. Definitely my experience out here.
That's the long and short version of it. If you want to know more, like I wrote a how to, or not a how to, like a guide explaining what the different 5G terms mean, go read that, because it does a pretty good job of breaking down what 5G in Canada actually is right now. So anyway,
with the Pixel 6, like one of the things that interests me as someone who primarily uses an iPhone and has for the last couple of years, like some of the magic of Apple, like you can talk about like the hardware and blah, 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 blah. But I think really the key thing that makes the iPhone such an appealing device is how reliable it is. And part of that comes from the synergy of like Apple makes the chip, Apple makes the software, combine them together. And there's just like, it's like a really good experience in terms of reliability and performance. With the Pixel 6, it sounds like to some extent, Google's trying to do that. Like they're making their own chip. I know that Android's obviously available to a bazillion smartphone manufacturers, but like the kind of fork of it that's available on the Pixel is a little bit different than like, say, Samsung.
Oh, it's a lot different now. So much.
Yeah.
Is it a lot different now? Okay.
So, way different. They're all.
I'm still on the right track here.
Zones. Yeah.
Is there some truth to that? Like, is that what Google's trying to do with this? Because to me, from the outside, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a level of that. One of the things that Google has kind of touted with the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro is that Tensor is going to enable them to have better software support. And frustratingly, I'm going to write about this later today. I haven't had a chance to yet. The Pixel 6 and 6 Pro support will get up to 5 years of security updates, which is an improvement over past Pixels, but they're still only getting 3 years of OS updates. So what that means is you're going to get, if you buy a Pixel 6, you're going to get Android 13, 14, and 15.
And that's starting on Android 12 as well.
You're starting on Android 12.
Yeah.
Right. So those are your three major OS updates, and then you're going to get another 2 years beyond that of just security updates.
Sorry to cut you off, but if we were to compare that directly with Apple, what's that typically, 5 years?
So, yeah, I would say Apple.
I'll try and search what they're at. You guys keep talking about.
I think it's like five, roughly, because that's like another advantage of the Apple ecosystem is like they always find a way, even if it's a device that's like a couple years old, to make it run on it. I think it's 5 years, but I'm not certain.
So iOS 15 still supports the iPhone 6S, which came out in 2016, I want to say.
Before that, definitely before that. Yeah. Before that. 2015, I think. Early 2015.
I think the 6S is the oldest device on the iOS 15 support list. So
okay.
Well, that and the SE, they came out the same chipset, but yeah. Yeah, 2015, September 2015 was the 6S.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, sorry to cut you off, John. Continue.
So the kind of word on the tech street is that Qualcomm does not support their chips for a very long time with drivers, which are an important piece of the puzzle. So kind of, and I haven't seen this kind of said officially anywhere, but kind of the word on the street is that Google wanted to increase the amount of support or the number of years of support that they could offer to their phones, but Qualcomm wasn't supporting the chips that long. And so without Qualcomm supporting the chips long enough, Google was kind of, you know, we can't do that. So part of the benefit of doing their own in-house chip is that they now have more control over the software support, which to me makes it that much more frustrating that the Pixel 6 is still only going to have 3 years of OS updates. 5 years of security updates is good. Like that's an improvement. And I'm happy that that's there, because that means if you keep your phone and you take care of your Pixel 6, it's going to last 5 years without any sort of issue. Right. But not getting the latest OS upgrades is definitely a bit of a downside. And the thing is, Apple doesn't do the split operating system updates where they do security updates and OS updates. Everything is all together, right?
Yep.
And you might not get some new features that are only supported by newer hardware on older phones, but you're still getting the full iOS update. So just a little bit of a bummer there. But I'm hoping that, you know, pushback from customers will kind of get Google to go further with the Pixel 6 than what it has promised.
We so might Bennett, see that extend. Sorry, I was going to say, we might see that extend, yeah, you know, once they get like a larger, you know, three or four Tensor chips down the chain, maybe they'll start to be able to push that further. But yeah, you're right. At the time being like, yeah, we're like, oh, Tensor, we're going to get 5 years of updates. And they're like, 5 years of security updates. It's like, oh, that's okay, but not what I wanted.
I guess the other part of it is to play devil's advocate with myself a little bit. Google has said that with Tensor, they've built a lot of the AI and ML functionality into the chip, which basically means that a lot of the new features that you're going to see on the Pixel 6 that are like kind of software based actually do rely on the Tensor chip and aren't going to come to older Pixels. So for example, yeah, Google talked about some of the like camera
erase
stuff.
Me motion mode, the faster transcription stuff.
Well, just
that.
Like image processing in general is kind of built into the ISP in a way that makes it a lot more efficient, but it also means that they can't bring those newer, more efficient models and more powerful models to older Pixels because it won't run on those other chips. They're designed all around Tensor. So with that in mind, theoretically going forward, if Google designs all kinds of crazy new AI ML experiences for the four Pixel phones, those might not run on earlier Tensor hardware.
I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
Especially like if they're building that stuff into the chip, right?
Yeah. How specific?
Which could explain the 3 years of OS upgrades, but I'm kind of just speculating at this point. So I wouldn't, don't take that as truth.
There's probably a point of like, just as the final slice of the pie, there's probably just a point where it's like, you know, how long do consumers actually use their phone? What's the average support?
I think it's probably like 3 years. Probably 3 years. Yeah. Some people maybe a little more, but I think roughly speaking, it's 3 years. But speaking of features, Bennett, was there anything from the presentation that like really stood out to you? Like Magic Eraser seemed really cool to me. Real Tone, the concept of a camera sensor and camera technology being designed to take pictures of more than just white people that look like me. That's like a huge issue with cameras, and it has been forever. So it's cool to see a company actually tackling that and taking it seriously. Was there anything that stood out to you?
No, I mean, you're right. Real Tone is probably the thing that I'm like the most excited to see. And like, I hope it like impacts and like influences change amongst like the rest of the market in camera space. We'll see.
That would be cool.
But I really hope it does. But I like on top of that, yeah, mostly just the camera stuff. I mean, I guess that's kind of what I'm into. But the motion mode, just more recently, I've been getting into like long exposure photography or just trying it out in different ways, you know, bringing my tripod out, trying to get like those classic light trails of cars and just getting stuff like that. So seeing Google like come on now, having a better understanding for how like how hard that is and like how much gear is involved, not that it's much, but you know you need a tripod, you gotta have this, you gotta be steady, you gotta hit the shutter, sit there for a second, sit there for 2 seconds, sit there for 6 seconds, sit there for, you know, like however long you want to do your thing. The fact that Google has sort of like built that into a snap that you just like hit, and I'm assuming will like probably take the picture in a second or two in the same way that like a night mode photo does, where it's like you just hold it in your hand. Pretty cool. And like, you know, there's like subway shots and like the one they showed up, the Ferris wheel moving, it's like they
that
showed
one was
the,
cool.
Yeah, exactly, because the picture you looked at and you're like, that's a pretty cool picture, how does it get better? And then it's like woof, and you're like, oh my god, that's actually so much cooler. So I'm excited to hopefully get my hands on those and test them out at some point. But yeah, the Tensor stuff didn't excite me as like, I'm more excited by what Tensor represents for Google moving forward than what it actually like brought to the phone. You know, the dictation, I'm like interested. I mean, hopefully if dictation keeps getting better and better, I guess maybe we'll get to a point in the world where we're using a lot more dictation, which could be cool. And, you know, some of the other like machine learning stuff with the like auto call, hearing the options and like letting you choose the option to go through a, a call screen. Is that the right word reason for that?
Yeah.
Not a call screen, so or a call center situation.
That's an expansion on an existing feature. Because Google already has hold for me on Pixels, where it will just wait on hold for you and let you know when a real person comes back. So they've kind of expanded on that, which is really neat. Do we know if that feature is coming to Canada right away, or if that's what the deal is with that? Because I know hold for me did not come to Canada at launch.
We reached out about it, but we haven't heard back yet.
Okay.
I have no idea. But kind of what I'm saying is, like, those things didn't excite me as much as the cameras. You know, I don't know. The one thing that actually, like, was super meh, and I don't know if you guys felt this way, but the super zoom they showed off, like, we've got 40 times super zoom or whatever their hybrid zoom is, and they showed it off on stage, and it looked terrible. They, like, zoom in on this hiker or this rock climber, and it's like, okay, there's a picture from the ultra wide, picture from the regular camera, regular zoom. Okay, now they've zoomed into the point where he looks like a smudge, like a red streak on the rock.
Why it reminded me of
are they showing that off?
The S20's zoom.
Yeah, exactly.
Samsung backpedaled on. Like, the S21, I reviewed that this year. The 10x zoom, the optical 10x, it was incredible. Like, it's one of the best zooms I've ever seen on a smartphone camera, and I found it extremely useful. But for me, like, and I know this isn't how, like, the average smartphone user thinks, because I don't even know if anyone truly knows the difference between digital and optical, like the average person who's using a smartphone who just, like, takes the camera and snaps a picture. But, like, I don't care about zoom unless it's optical, because I know it's not gonna look good.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hate that you said you prefaced that with the average person doesn't care, which is, like, you're very true, so I guess we shouldn't talk about that too much. But yeah, that's, like, for me, yeah, it's not optical. Well,
it's the same thing as, like, a lot of people have issues with, not a lot of people, but some people have issues with the way that Apple handles its smartphone cameras, right? Like, there's no manual mode where you can select ISO and shutter speed and all that stuff. And you can get apps, of course, that allow you to do that. But I just don't think that the average human who is buying an iPhone gives a crap about that. They just want to, like, point and shoot and take a picture. Sure, Apple could offer it, but I understand the other side of the spectrum where, like, it's not worth the effort for them, especially when third party app people or app developers are, like, making that happen on their own.
Yeah. That's the same thing with the Pixel Pro, the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. It's all automatic. There's not, like, a manual mode or anything like that, which, you know, just like you said, I think a lot of tech journalists are going to complain about it. But as soon as you step out of the tech journalist bubble, it's not something that matters. Even for me, as someone who is a tech journalist, I have never used a manual mode on a phone.
Neither have I.
I would never. I have no desire. If I'm going to go through the effort of tweaking ISO and shutter speed and all that stuff, I'm going to go pick up my actual DSLR and take a good picture.
Yep. Same with me.
If I'm using my phone camera, it's because I need a camera. And I need it fast. And so I just want something that I can take out of my pocket and I take the picture and I know it's going to be good. And that's why I love the Pixel cameras. I've loved all of the Pixel cameras so far, and I'm really excited for the Pixel 6 camera, because that's what the Pixel in general, their cameras have excelled at. I need to take a photo and I need to take it now and it needs to be good.
One thing I will say is I don't think everything is automatic in the new camera. I think that, like, fixing blurry, jumpy kids seems like an automatic thing. I don't know if that motion blur one is automatic or if that's a mode you need to turn on in the way you would turn on, like, night mode and that kind of stuff. They were calling that one specifically motion mode. I think that might be its own thing.
To clarify by automatic, I mean, like, I don't have to mess with ISO or shutter speed.
You don't
or
have
anything
to know
like
the triangle.
That.
Yeah, for sure.
So real quick. Before we wrap it up, I just wanted to throw one final question to both of you. If you're going to go out and buy, like, John, I know you're handling our Pixel 6 review. I guess I should mention this. John's doing our Pixel 6 review. Dean's going to be doing our Pixel 6 Pro review. Bennett's doing the third gen AirPods, and I'll be handling the MacBook. And all of these reviews, like, you'll see them on the site next week. Can't tell you specifically when, but it's going to be, if it all works out, pretty much at the same time. But the question I was going to ask you guys, like, if you were going to go out and buy a Pixel and this was, like, the phone that you decided you were going to buy for the year, it's like you're taking your tech blogger hat off, you're getting a phone that you're going to hang on to for the next couple years. Would you pick the Pixel 6? Oh, good. You took it off. Perfect.
Yeah.
Would you pick the Pixel 6 or would you pick the Pixel 6 Pro? Like, is there enough of a difference in the 6 Pro to warrant that? Like, when I sit back and when I look at them now, I honestly think that I would probably go with the Pixel 6 if only because I think it's 6.7 inches, right?
The 6 Pro is 6.7 inches and the 6 is 6.4 inches.
Which is the same as the iPhone 13 Pro Max, which I recently like decided I'm not going to, I do not like smartphones that size anymore. They hurt my hands and I don't want to use a big phone. That's one reason, but also just like, there doesn't seem to be enough that it offers over the Pixel 6. Like 90 hertz is the display, right? Like that's enough for my purposes. I guess what I want to know is like, what do you guys think? Like, which one would you buy?
If I were going to buy a Pixel 6 this year, you know, not like tech blogger hat off. I'm not actually taking my hat off because my hair's a mess.
I didn't take mine
off. I'm going to get mine cut right after this.
Theoretical tech blogger hat. I would buy the Pixel 6, like, no question. The 6 Pro offers nothing that I need and nothing that I want, with the exception of the telephoto camera lens. I think it's criminal that Google did not put the telephoto lens in both phones and save the ultra wide for the Pro, because ultra wide is useless. Don't give me that.
Yeah.
Just give me a telephoto lens.
I'm going Pro for literally, I'm the opposite. The same reason, but I'm leaning towards the Pro. I would get the Pro because I don't want a phone without a telephoto. I find that's the lens I almost use the most on my phone camera.
Me too.
I don't want one without it. Like, I'm always seeing pictures of shit that's across the street, you know? Like, it's always like a one street distance. Like, oh, what's that? Snap. It's never like right in front of me, you know? Like, every once in a while it is, but it's always something that's like a street distance away, and that telephoto just reaches that. And
that's part of why I always go with the whatever the Pro iPhone is because it's the one that has the zoom, right? And the standard one just has the ultra wide, unless I'm confusing it in my very tired brain.
No, you're but right.
That's correct.
Typically why I go with the Pro in that context too.
Yeah. But other than the telephoto lens, the Pixel 6 is basically better for me in every way. Like on paper, obviously the 6 Pro is the better phone, but I don't like huge phones. And I think the Pixel 6, I will wait until I have my hands on it to see. But I already think the Pixel 6 is going to be too big for me because that 6.4 inch screen is bigger than the 4 XL screen. And I already thought the 4 XL was like too large.
Yeah, I think the iPhone 6.3.
Looking it up.
Yeah, it's a big phone.
The Pixel 6 colors, way better color options on the Pixel 6. The price can't beat $800 in Canada for Pixel 6. Yeah. That's a really solid price.
A lot of phone.
Yeah, a lot of phone. So
yeah, iPhone 13.
The thing that would seal the deal for me would be the telephoto 6.1? Lens.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, John. To answer your question, Bennett, iPhone 13 Pro Max is 6.7, which is the same as the Pixel 6 Pro, I believe. And then the standard iPhone 13 and the iPhone 13 Pro are 6.1, which I have definitively decided is the best size for a smartphone in my personal taste. Now, like, I love that size. I have no idea why I put myself through using the Max. We've gone a little bit over. Is there anything either of you want to mention before we wrap this up regarding the Pixel 6 series?
The one thing that I will say really quickly is, based on some carrier math that I've done, it looks like the best way to go if you want to get the Pixel 6 or 6 Pro at a Canadian carrier is Freedom Mobile. With the exception of those who live in Alberta or BC that also happen to be Shaw internet customers. If you're in that small segment of Canadians, Shaw Mobile is actually a better deal than Freedom Mobile. But based on my calculations, Freedom Mobile is the only carrier that like lets you get the Pixel 6 or 6 Pro for cheaper than it would be if you were to buy it from Google directly. Every other carrier, you're either going to pay about the same as you would if you bought it from Google, or you're actually going to pay more. So that's a little fun fact for you Pixel 6 shoppers out there.
We have all the pricing on the site too. Like, I know there's some carriers that haven't revealed it yet. It'll be added when it comes out. What's missing? Rogers still?
Nope. Bell. But okay. I don't think Bell is going to release their pricing because they have like a page on their website now that basically just says the Pixel 6 will be available October 28th. And that's
We got a lot of, when I woke up, I always check the Mobile SERP Twitter in the morning just to see if there's any like reader tips and whatnot. And there's a lot of people asking for Bell's Pixel 6 pricing. So hopefully they release it ahead of when the phone drops.
Yeah. It's what Bell has put out is in the our pricing breakdown article right now, which is no pricing, unfortunately. Yeah. Virgin Plus, which is Bell's offshoot brand, if you go to their website and go to their devices page and filter by Google devices, it's just blank. There's nothing there. Same with Videotron. And then the only other two carriers that I can think of off the top of my head that I haven't found Pixel pricing for yet are Eastlink and SaskTel. And neither of them even have Google devices on their website.
That's ridiculous.
As far as I can tell. So I don't know if they'll ever get Pixel 6 pricing.
Bennett, what about you?
We'll keep an eye on it.
Any final thoughts?
I mean, I want one, but okay, here's actually my final thought. Regardless of the Pixel 6, I think I'm still more excited about Android 12 than I am about the Pixel 6 hardware that was showing up. I think Android 12 is still more exciting to me, the new design and the sort of where that is going, than what Google should offer with Android or Pixel 6. I mean, I am excited about the Tensor stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like where that leads, if, you know, it's putting Google on the path to become a more like full stack owning everything like Apple does. I want to see that happen just because I want to see the Titans really go at it, even though I know that's probably not great for the world. But on top of that, Android 12 looks sick. Pretty happy with it. You know, if I don't end up with a Pixel 6 and I stick with my 4A 5G with Android 12 for another year, I don't think I'll be too upset. That's what I'd stay with.
Cool. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Next week, well, I don't know if it'll be next week. I think the week after. I know we skipped a week. We wanted to have an episode this week. We're a bi-weekly podcast. I think the next episode will likely be focused on maybe exclusively the Pixel 6 reviews, John and Dean's reviews. That's what I kind of have in my head right now. We'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll talk about the MacBook Pro very briefly, but I think the Pixel 6 is definitely a bigger deal. At least
maybe we'll squeeze a certain dual screen phone in there.
Oh yeah, the Surface. Yeah. Forgot about that too. Maybe we'll just have like a review episode. I don't know. We'll figure it out, but we will have an episode in 2 weeks. I know we skipped a week, but that's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_O'Rourke. And of course on mobilesyrup.com. I got a ton of stuff coming over the next couple of days. I've been playing a certain real-time strategy game that I'm pretty hyped about and can't mention what it is, but I'll have something about that on the site next week as well, along with something related to Apple's new MacBooks. Bennett, where can people find you?
You can find me anywhere at the Bradfad on mobilesyrup.com, mobilesyrup YouTube channel, and I will have something with the AirPods coming up. I've got Surface Go 3, the pipeline. I'm trying to get something working on the Polestar 2 at the end of the month. I'm going to have that for a few days. I've got a cool action camera that I may or may not have shown right here on screen earlier, unclear. And a few other things. I'm trying to think what else I've got coming up. I have something. I can't remember what it is, so we'll have to wait and find out. Sorry.
Okay. And John, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter @John_Lamont, and that's JON_LAMONT. And of course, on the website, mobilesyrup.com, where I will have many interesting things in the next few
days. You got a lot going on in a very short period of time. It's an interesting 2 weeks for us here in Mobile Syrup Land. That's for certain.
At least one of the things that I've written about is visible in my camera feed right now. If you're watching the video cast, I'm not going to point to it, but if you spot it, let us know in the comments.
It's like Phil Spencer taking a photo in the background.
Yeah, it's not subtle.
And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @mobilesyrup. Thanks for listening and watching.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.